You're listening to Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. We live, work, play, and broadcast from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations.
It's 8 p.m. and you're listening to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection on Vancouver Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM, and online at cooperadio.org. I'm Sandy Goldman, and tonight we're heading to Victoria for our feature on the Women in Need Co-op, or WIN. This community service co-op provides support for women in the Greater Victoria area who are in the process of leaving abusive relationships and starting over. WIN's goal is to empower women through a variety of programs which provide assistance on the road between crisis and wellness. Community members do their part by shopping at WIN's 5 resale locations, donating funds, used goods, and volunteering. Last year, I was fortunate enough to meet some of the cooperators who work on the front line at WIN. I began with Michelle Young, one of WIN's founders. She told me how this important project got started.
WIN started back in, it was an idea back in 1989 when a friend of mine and I attended Bridges for Women. And we all had an idea, our class, our group, around what we were going to do in the way of employment after we left Bridges. Bridges for Women is a program for women who have been out of the field of employment for a number of years, have experienced either family of origin abuse or spousal abuse, and needs to find their way and what will fit for them in the world of employment. So my close friend, Charlotte Semple, had an idea to address some of the crisis issues for women who were leaving a local transition house. And that was the choices that the women had were either to, when it was time to leave, either to go into an apartment or a house with their children with nothing, no beds, no nothing, or go back to the home where violence was taking place. And what her idea was if we could just provide some practical items, beds, pots and pans, so they could cook a meal for their kids, dishes to eat from, maybe they would make a different choice. And with choice comes different outcomes. And so our idea was to open a thrift store and have the best thrift store in Victoria. And so she asked, my friend Charlotte asked some of her friends, including myself, to help her for a little while, get this thing going. I said, I know nothing about nonprofits because it was society in the beginning. And I said, but I can gather information. And so we all gathered information. There were 7 of us to start. We learned we had to form a board, and we looked at government funding and found that the crisis support we wanted to provide would not be funded, but we could do something different. And so, as rather tenacious, stubborn women who wanted to be independent, and we believed we had a plan that would offer choice for women and would be effective somewhat, we decided to set out and do it ourselves. And so one of the women's fathers loaned us $2,000, and we needed to make $35 a day in a store. We knocked on doors. We knocked on paint store doors and said, would you give us paint? We went to department stores and said, what do you do with your old mannequins and your hangers? And we went to our friends and said, clean out your closets. Give us your jewelry. Don't want anymore. Give us those things. We went to consignment stores and said, what do you do with things that people don't want anymore if it hasn't sold? That's how we started. And today we need a lot more than $35 a day.
So the idea with the thrift stores was that there would be items there for general purchase, or items, and the money would go to women in transition, or that there were items there for women in transition. Can you just explain
originally
that?
We did ask the transition house to be under their umbrella. We wanted them to start fund start funding us so that we could get started and that all the revenue would go to the Transition House. And the Transition House, their response was they're really not in the business of secondhand stores. And so we said, we still want the women who are going into the Transition House to receive the support that we want to provide. And so we started on our own. And of course, the organizations that we provide the women to are many, many more than just the Transition House. But there is one program that just the Transition House, Victoria Women's, the Cridge Transition House and Souk Transition House receive our New Start package, and that's always been exclusive to them. And the revenue, so women can come into the stores and shop in the stores, but we also, because we weren't receiving government funding, we had to make enough money to pay our rent and pay the various heat and those kinds of things. And that's still today. We still need to always balance what we sell to the general public and what is given away. And our gift certificates are not restrictive in any way. A woman can take what she wants with her gift certificate so that she has choice. Choice is a very important value for us here at Wynn.
So there's two things that I've heard you say that stick out with me. One is that the group of you at the beginning, the founders of which you are one, that being independent was important. I'm hearing independence and choice. Can you say more about both of those in terms of the founders and where we are today in 2019 in terms of supporting women to make choices in their lives, different lives, to change their lives, or whether they've been in an abusive relationship or not? Why are those things important?
Independence is really important. It was important to the founders originally because most of those women in Bridges were on income assistance. They were not independent, and they came from situations where they didn't have a lot of independence. And so learning how important that was to our growth and having choice in the world, and having confidence and defining who we were and how we wanted to be in this world. The paths of the women were also very varied, so very different. And to give them choice around what they knew instinctively, in most cases, how to change their path and how to bring independence to themselves was really important. So rather than us making choices for them or someone else making choices for us towards what does independence mean to us and what does self-sufficiency and how to be self-sustaining was a strong value and still is today at Wynn.
I was just speaking with one of the staff here who's also on the board, Nicole, and she was just talking about her own learning curve over the years, starting as a volunteer and then, you know, moving into staff position. Now she's a retail manager, and how much it sounds like how much she has grown as a person. And do you find that's the case with so many people that you've met over the years who are involved with Wynn and your programs?
I do. It's inspiring for me, and it motivates me to continue on doing what we're doing because there is this growth, and I've experienced it myself. I've learned so much about support and what support really means and how important it is to assist and hand up, not provide solutions or results will come from those who are receiving the support. And I interviewed Nicole for her volunteer position, and was part of the hiring for Nicole as well. And she is an amazing young woman, and she has the kind of value and heart that just makes our organization grow in our, strengthens our values. And my values certainly have been strengthened and have grown. I've learned as much as anyone else has in this organization.
So you are the volunteer coordinator.
I am.
And so tell me more about what that involves. How do you kind of get the word out that you're looking for volunteers? And again, and what you are looking for in a volunteer?
A lot of our volunteers come from being customers and donors in the store. They learn that we require volunteer help. The process is either to fill out an application form or send me an email or look on our website. There's a variety of ways. We also are a member of Volunteer Victoria, and a lot of people in the community who are looking for volunteer experience go to Volunteer Victoria because they have hundreds of organizations listed that need volunteers. And today, as compared to the beginning in the early 90s, women are primarily working and full-time. It's there aren't that many stay-at-home moms. And I had 125 volunteers with one store back in 1993. And today we have about 50 or 60. And we have five shops.
Wow.
And a huge warehouse where we do all our processing. That is reflective of our community structure now, our society. Women are going to school, they have families, they've got full-time jobs. They don't have the luxury of the kids go off to school and now I can volunteer one day a week. So we have the stores women can volunteer in, and they're four different locations. We have processing if people are not interested in the retail aspect, and every thing someone does here as a volunteer, if either it's sweeping floors or answering phones or tagging or hanging clothes, it all contributes to our success, because the more money that we can put towards programs, the more support we have for our programs and the more we can distribute to women. Having said that, I'm very proud to say that we provide employment in the community. And at one time that wasn't looked at positively. It was considered negative because there weren't any nonprofit organizations back when we started that I knew of that were enterprising nonprofits. They all had government funding. And there was an opinion that government money should, our tax dollars should never go to employ people. It should all be done for nothing out of the goodness of your heart. We learned that running a business you can't do with volunteer help. It has to be managed by people who will deal with shoplifting, will deal with aggressive customers, will deal with those kinds of things.
The fact that you do it, provide employment, that wasn't an original goal?
No.
And so when did you start to believe enough in your endeavors that you could really start to do that?
When those of us who were there and couldn't get a day off.
Right. Necessity is the mother of invention.
Yes, it is.
Right. Okay. I should have asked this before, but I'm going to ask it now. Why the thrift store model? For example, why did you decide to do that rather than, let's say, open a coffee shop or become caterers or something else? What were you thinking when you went with that idea?
We believed that we could receive what we were going to sell for free because we didn't have any, we had no funds. We didn't have any money. We were all very low income. And Charlotte had a used bookstore years before, and her and I were very avid thrift store shoppers. Mm-hmm. I went to all the thrift stores, and you said mother of invention. It was necessary for me to clothe my children and myself.
Yes.
And it would take me hours to go through a lot of the merchandise to find really the great stuff. And we believed that we could have a thrift store that smelled great, looked great. We helped customers find what they needed. And you didn't have to kiss a lot of frogs to find treasures. It was that old story. One man's junk or one woman's junk is another woman's treasure. And so we believed that we could receive support in the community, from women and men in the community who would believe in what we were doing and help support us by giving us their donations, by donating. So we...
And you did get that support.
We sure did.
And you still do.
Yes, and it just built and built and built. And in a lot of cases, a lot of the people in the community trust that we are helping women in our community, even though they don't know the details of our programs, right, which is really fascinating to me. But I also don't know details to places that I donated to. But I believed in their mission, and I believed in what they were doing.
Sorry, I just lost that thought. One of the questions was, what was your first location? That was it. Where was your first thrift store?
Our first thrift store was a little 600-square-foot space just off of Hillside Avenue below Quadra. And that was a little space that... we could pay for if we made $35 a day, and it was beside a feeder store that had snakes and crickets and geckos and things. And the
family. Oh, like an exotic pet store?
It was a feeder for, they were raising all that, but it wasn't the store itself where they were selling them. And sometimes we couldn't get our door open because the foundation in this, it was a little strip mall, was sinking. And there were days when we would find geckos on our walls. And our very first bag sale, Charlotte was the brainchild for the bag sale it was our very first bag sale. And I was pushing the clothes forward as they were selling, and there was a tarantula on the floor.
Oh.
And I went up to one of our other women. Her name was Louise, and I said, "Louise, there's a tarantula on the floor. If a woman sees that, she's going to scream, and everybody's going to leave. We're not going to be very successful." So she just took a yogurt container and put it on top, and away it went. But that was an interesting location. It was the first one, and we were only in there for about 7 months because everyone had to get out because the foundation was not safe.
And where did you go next?
We went to Cook Street. It was an old Glen Paint store, and we tore down walls and we painted, and we got showcases from the Bay, and all kinds of stuff.
Community effort. People really pitched in at that point.
They sure did.
Now, you're also the chair of the board.
I am.
And so that's a different hat that you're wearing. And I understood from Claire that it's very clear to people who are, when they're wearing their sort of staff hat and they're wearing their board hat. And I think that's really important because many people are kind of wearing both hats, being on the board and that. So what do you see your role as chair of the board?
That's an interesting question. What do I see my role? Well, as the chair, it's a position of honor for me, first of all. And the chair's role is to maintain the chair meetings and to... I have to stop here for a minute and give that some deeper thought. the chair's responsibility is to make sure that meetings stay on track and that there is confidentiality in the meetings and that we all understand that even with difficulty, we do all have different roles. And when we're talking about various... financial things, we have to maintain a position of somewhat distant from, well, what's my wage and what's someone else's wage. We have to look at it from a very different position as a board who's overlooking the organization rather than our own individual wants and needs and those kinds of things.
Do you like that role, being chair of the board?
I take it very seriously. It's quite a role of responsibility, and I am honored to have it. Sometimes it feels weighty for me, and as long as I can continue to be contributing to this organization, even still as a volunteer, although I am employed with WIN, then I will do that because this organization is incredibly important to me. And yeah.
What is your greatest reward, would you say? And I think we're going to wrap it up with that. What, all these years later, from 1991 to 2019, here we are.
Seeing and experiencing and hearing from the women over so many years who have come back and said, WIN helped me when I was in a transition house. They gave me beds when I didn't have beds. They gave me dishes to feed my kids with, and or helped my aunt or helped my mother. And I'm seeing second generation now, which is incredibly rewarding. And we've had women who come to access our a self-sufficiency bursary program. And one, for the last intake we had, she said, Michelle, she was a volunteer with you. And she said, I just want to thank you because my mom really, really made some changes in her life because she was here at WIN 20 years ago. And so those kinds of things are just, they're so meaningful and there's so many of them.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for this incredible organization that came out of that Bridges program, that
Bridges for Women,
you, Charlotte, and who else was it?
Carol Fast, Carol Charlotte Fast. Simple, and myself.
Are they still with us, Charlotte and Carol?
No, they've moved on about 13 years ago. As I think most people know, you leave with what you came in with,
right,
in the way of finances on,
right,
nonprofit organizations.
Right.
And they retired about 13 years ago. And we looked at succession planning,
right,
a couple of years before that because we knew that non-traditionally we were managing WIN, and we wanted it to continue on because we were, you know, I'm 70, and so we knew that at some point we're going to want to retire. And so we hired a woman who does that kind of facilitation in succession planning and structuring, and she brought one of her students with her to kind of just take down what we believed was going to be required, because we knew it was going to be an incredibly difficult and challenging position for anyone, because three of us were doing the job of one person, and we needed that many people. And she brought her student along, who was Claire Yezganalu, and our so the universe has just smiled at us, and yet she brought us our executive director. And Claire brings the wellness programs, because we started out with crisis programming, and Claire brought the wellness portion to us.
That was Michelle Young, one of the founders of the Women in Need Cooperative that serves the Greater Victoria area. You know, as of today, WIN has 50 staff, 60 committed volunteers, 5 resale shops, 1 warehouse, and 2 trucks. The resale shops have discount days for various members of the community. They're big into upcycling. They're busy, and they're just a going concern. And all the funds raised go to support women in need, women in transition from crisis to wellness. Let's hear a little bit more of the story of the WIN Cooperative. We hear next from Executive Director Claire Yezganalu.
WIN was originally created to provide really practical solutions to women leaving transition houses and to make sure that they had access to the goods, because when people leave transition houses, they're often leaving with just themselves, so that they would have access to the things that they needed, from clothing to furniture to bedding, all of those things, so that when they could leave and set up their own home, that they would have those things. So that was the very sort of impetus of WIN. And now our programs have grown over the years, so we are still very present in terms of being there to support women in that time of crisis and transition, and also there along with them on their journeys towards self-sufficiency. And so we've added the self-sufficiency program as well as the transformations program. And self-sufficiency is an opportunity to access bursaries, so that can be applied to education, training, starting a small business, starting a co-op. And the transformations program is a really intensive self-development educational program. So it's just an opportunity to look at self-sufficiency and wellness, as women sort of are ready to take those steps.
Now you, you've stated that you are self-sufficient. You do not rely on government grants or programs or that. Is that correct?
That's right.
And so how do you fund all of this great work that you're doing for women?
Again, that's something that came from the very beginning, that importance of being self-sustaining as an organization has been with us always. And we do that by receiving donations of goods from the community, and most of our donations are from individuals. And then we have 5 resale shops now where we sell those items. It's also where women access the gift certificate program. So that those sales, that is actually how we remain self-sustaining. And we do have some financial donations, but they're a fairly small part of our ability to remain self-sustaining.
So really, over the years, it's allowed you to give back to the community and support women, and also provide a wonderful level of all kinds of things that you're selling, from furniture to clothing to jewelry, books, and also you've got a very important environmental mandate. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so we receive an enormous number of donations, which we're incredibly grateful, and it's really important to say that without our donors, we wouldn't be able to do any of the things that we do in this community. And by receiving those donations, it does make sure that, all the items that we receive have new life in some way. And so something that may not be usable or useful to someone, like a pen or item of clothing, then comes into our shops, and it's either accessed by someone in our gift certificate program, or it might go through to someone in our New Start program, or it might be someone in the community who is then able to access these really great quality items in our stores. And all of that makes sure that it's diverted from going into the landfill. And so that has a huge environmental impact.
I think you've been honored for that, or recognized for that, by some awards.
Yeah, we received an EcoSmart award, which was really, it was really lovely to receive.
Okay, I've got from your website some of your values, and I just wanted to talk about some of those. So we've talked about self-sustainability, responsibility, and healthy relationships. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, so, fundamentally, our organization is about relationships, and relationships with people in the community, so our shoppers and our donors who support us, and relationships with our program participants, and also supporting them in having healthy relationships in their lives. And that transformations program is a big piece of that as well. But how we, for all of us, how we relate to one another, how we care for one another, how we have self-compassion, so relate to ourselves, is really key to everything, I think, in the world. And it's actually what connects us. I think that one of the things that we really care about is that we don't see distance between ourselves and our program participants. We are very much the same. we are all in this journey together in terms of being able to have fulfilling, happy lives and being well in ourselves.
Entrepreneurship, I read that theme over and over again, and empowerment, empowering women, mm-hmm. And the sort of decisions that were made around the good works that you chose to do. Can you kind of fit that into a response? Because I get the sense that it's not just giving women, and now for some women, starting a new life in and of itself is huge, but some people are taking it further with your support.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's really about both as an organization. So we see that we are, in a sense, responsible to create our own path, and we have choice in that. And so, you know, our choice to be self-sustaining and enterprising has been a really sort of fundamental part of who we are. And I think in working with our program participants, their own choice, their own path, determining what is working for them, what steps they want to next take is really core to how our programs developed. And we have the opportunity to actually develop programs based on what we understand from the women the needs are. So, you know, developing the self-sufficiency program came out of recognizing that that was a fundamental need. And we were able to do that because we are self-sustaining.
And another point here I saw is we are a learning organization promoting individual, organizational, and community development. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I think this is true from the very beginning of WIN, is that is really people coming together who have a huge passion for making change and for creating the programs and being there. And in that, there's lots of learning. I think we're constantly learning. So we all have different skills. We all have different, you know, paths that have brought us here. And it's us coming together and learning from one another and also being open. I think our capacity to be open to change and adapting and growing has actually made us be able to do what we're doing and to be able to continue to grow. And as I was saying before, that some of the best ideas have just come from someone saying, why don't we try this? And it's worked out to be something incredible.
Now, on your website, I saw something called the Diversity and Inclusion Survey. Can you say more about that? It sounds like those are important, that you want to represent the community that you're in, and also that you want to make it a safe and accessible place, mm-hmm. for people to shop. And that's really great. I mean, is that a more recent goal for WIN?
I don't think it's been a recent goal. I think it's been a goal that we've always had. I think we're just getting better at being more accessible, asking questions, making sure that we are really capturing everyone in our community and making sure that how we might understand accessibility continues to grow and continues to really truly be more accessible.
And making it a safe place, a non-judgmental.
Yeah. Yeah, making sure that everybody feels really safe and in the space, you know, shoppers, program participants, staff, volunteers, everyone. Yeah.
Do you have an affiliation with a particular credit union that's supporting you, either through, you know, the sort of so-called banking that you're doing, or just in terms of community support? Because we know that credit unions are also giving back to the community and their financial co-ops. I'm just curious about that.
We have been with Coast Capital forever. We also have a really great relationship with Van City, and so they're both credit unions that have been great supporters.
So what are some of the future plans you're looking at? I know you just opened a new donation center, and tell me why you did that.
So we had our donation center at our Cook Street location basically since we opened, and it was just becoming too physically small for us to be able to process the donations and receive the donations. We also saw an opportunity that we could create a furniture store, which we haven't really had proper space for. So a few years ago, we were able to start a warehouse where we could process things. And so we were for many years transporting our donations from there to the warehouse. So now we're able to put the donation center into the warehouse itself, which now we're able to offer way better parking. It's a generally better location for most people. So it's better for our donors, and it's better for just our being able to be efficient in what we're doing, which is really important. And so that's why we moved the donation center. And I think everybody has been really thrilled when they get there, like, wow, this is great. So it's felt like a really great decision. And then the furniture store now just opened the beginning of March. And that's been going really well, too. So that's just another place where people can access furniture. And then we have an upcycling focus to that, too. So that's just a way of us growing a little bit more and being able to better, you know, do better in terms of the shops and also do better in terms of donors.
What would you say the greatest challenges have been as executive director of this organization?
I mean, really, there's a lot of joy in being executive director, so that's what first comes to mind. There's a huge amount of, I just feel so, well, lucky, really, to be able to be part of WIN and be able to be part of all the growth that happens and be in a role where I can be part of leading that. And I think the challenges are the complexity of the organization. The challenges are that there's always lots to think about. There's always many different parts. But I think that's the beauty of WIN too. So it's complicated and it's challenging, which personally I love. I think it's just that sort of combination of all so many people coming together, which creates this, like, it just creates amazing energy, amazing sort of ability to shift and change and do things in Victoria. So I don't know if I really answered the question, but it's just an incredible thing. And you know, it's busy and that's great. Yeah.
And are there other organizations asking you for advice to do something similar in their communities? I know with a couple of co-ops I've interviewed over the years, they've set sort of the model or the template, and others are saying, hey, you know, we'd like to do something similar. Do you get that kind of inquiry?
Yeah, we have done over the years. And there have been a few organizations that we've helped in terms of, like, this is our model and this is how we do it. So sort of supporting them. And certainly for us, where we are and what we're doing is the right fit. So we have been asked, like, oh, I don't want you to try that in Vancouver or why, you know, up Island. And I think we do really well doing what we're doing. And we have some growth within this community, but I think us being in this community is really the great fit for us. Yeah.
Is there something that I've missed that you want to comment on or add that you feel is important for our listeners to know about WIN or for you personally doing this work?
I guess really just how incredibly, it's hard to say, just the ability for us to create change and to, make things happen in the community in terms of the shops and donations, as well as just being able to witness the incredible courage of women. That I think that's what drives all of us is knowing that women are making shifts and have made those changes, and that's the passion, that's the impetus behind everything that we do.
Claire, you've been with the organization for quite a while, since about 2005, was it?
Yeah, 2004. Yeah.
So here we are, and it's 15 years or so later. In terms of the number of women seeking support, trying to get out of abusive relationships, changing their lives over the last 15 years, are you seeing that growing or subsiding, or is the need even greater now? What's your take on that, just given where we are in 2019?
I would say that the change has not, like, it hasn't changed. I think that the demographics have changed a little bit.
Can you say more about that?
I think that there are more older women who are accessing our programs than there were when I first started. However, I think that the overall need, I think the number of women accessing transition houses is still very much the same. And I think the other part that I've seen is that through our programs, the piece around people also coming and accessing the self-sufficiency program, the transformations program, that has grown, which I think is really hopeful. So I think both are present, and yeah, but I think that the piece around people needing to access the program at the correct crisis level is still very much there.
Women who access the self-sufficiency program, would they have also had to have come out of an abusive relationship, or could they just be a woman making a transition in their lives, trying to carve out a different path? What's the criteria?
It's women who have identified that they're ready to take another step along their journey towards self-sufficiency, but there is no requirement around them having had to be part of previous programs or having left an abusive relationship.
So that really casts a wider net.
Yeah. And
in that way, it's good to know, in a sense, because it's especially older women. I wonder if you get more older women in that program.
I think it's a real mix in that program. Yeah.
Because we know a lot of older workers or people are having to work longer. There's a big push on retraining mm-hmm. for older workers, actually for everyone who mm-hmm. could. It's potentially you could go through several careers in a lifetime as things change. So it's good to know that those programs are there. Tell me a bit about the support you get from the community and who you liaise with in terms of organizations.
Our most fundamental support is the individual donors who are bringing the donation of goods to us, and then people who have chosen to provide us with financial donations. And we also have lots of partnerships. So we have partnerships with, for the gift certificate program, 16 other local nonprofits. And so we provide them with the program certificates to provide to people in their programs. And then there's other organizations that we support by providing goods if they're needing something through their for their program participants as well, and then we have partner organizations in terms of the environment, so some of the people that we do recycling with, and then in terms of just the social enterprise piece as well, so just organizations that have been really supportive. Sometimes they're donating goods to us, or we've just been working with them for a really long time, so those sorts of relationships are really key to us being able to work in the community, because we've worked with people for really very many years, and that just creates that community support of support as well.
Okay, I think we're good here. Claire, thanks so much. I really appreciate you giving us the time today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was really lovely to talk to you.
That was Claire Yezganilou, the Executive Director of Victoria's Women in Need Co-op. Nicole LaPierre, retail manager at the Cook Street resale location, shared her own journey with me and how WIN's been a place where she has learned and grown over the last 8 years. I think her story sums up what Claire meant when she said WIN is all about relationships. Here's Nicole.
So I started 8 years ago. I started as a volunteer when I was just looking to get back into employment, and I wanted something to just fill my time while I was on EI. And I came across WIN, and I started at the Pandora location. And since then, it's been quite a journey. I've been anything from a part-time cashier all the way to now I'm the store manager of the Cook Street location and a member of the board of directors.
So tell me a bit about... first of all, your job as you're on paid staff with WIN.
Yeah.
So tell me about your work as the manager of the Cook Street store. What does that involve?
Sure. So I'm there 5 days a week, and it involves making sure that the store is always looking clean, well merchandised, well organized, that people are coming in and feeling welcome, that it's a safe and welcoming environment, that all the staff have their schedules set, that they know what to do when they come in, that everything is organized, nicely displayed, and the merchandise is being rotated. And that's typically what a day would look like.
How many staff are you responsible for there?
In any given day, we have usually 3 to 4 team members now since we've recently expanded that location. Before that, it would be usually 2 in a day for a total of about 5.
And is that, right now we're at the Pandora location.
Yeah.
Tell me about Cook. I'll see it later, but is it as large as this, as busy as this? How does it compare?
It's quite busy, but it is maybe half the size of our Pandora location. So Pandora is definitely the largest location space-wise. So when you walk in, you'll see clothing, housewares, linens, jewelry, CDs, DVDs, books, toys. We have a wide arrayment of things, but we never used to have furniture, so that's where the expansion came in. So around the back of the space is where our donation center has always been for like the last 27 years or so that we've been operating. It's been there, and that recently moved to a bigger location, so now we have furniture in that area, so it's doubled the space of our store.
So what has been on staff, and you're a member at large on the board?
Yeah.
When you're wearing your staff hat, that's different than wearing your board hat.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Can you say a little bit more about that division?
Absolutely. So when I'm working in the store, I'm thinking about the store's need from that perspective. And while I'm trying to understand the perspectives of others, I'm mostly focused on the success of my individual store. But when I'm on the board, I have to take off that hat and put on my board hat, where I'm thinking as a whole, as with the direction that the co-op has set, how we're going to get where we want to go with our direction. So I have to take off my Cook hat and put on my Win hat and think of the whole organization.
And what's it like for you being, how long have you been on the board?
I've been on the board for about 4 months now.
So what's the experience been like so far? I've never sat on a board, so tell me why you wanted to be on the board, and then what's it been like?
I really like to learn every aspect of the organization, and I find the more that I've been able to grow with Win, the more I've been able to learn, and that's really helped me to achieve our goals of just helping women change their lives and making a big impact in our community. So for the board, it's really given me a perspective on all the inner workings like that. We basically take what, as a co-op, we've decided that we're going to do, and then the board is kind of like a bit more of like how we're going to do that and what needs to happen, and then all that information kind of flows downwards from there.
Nicole, what do you think people should know about Win? What does it mean to you? What do you really think the story is here that needs to be told?
Yeah, we're a nonprofit, and we're changing people's lives, and we're impacting the community. And I think that knowing that we're like the difference between a nonprofit cooperative versus like a registered charity would be a big one. Where with a charity, it's run by the government, and they really direct where the needs are, what the priorities are, what we can focus on. While as a nonprofit and as a co-op, the members are able to make those decisions, and we are able to see in our day-to-day experiences at Win what the needs are, and to be able to help fill those needs in the community as we see them and as we decide them, opposed to having someone that has no someone that doesn't see the needs like from a distance saying that, hey, these are the needs. We get to kind of choose what they are.
When you've been with the organization for 8 years.
Yeah.
So in your 8 years, have you gotten community input or input directly from women as to what kind of services and support they need?
Absolutely. Every day.
Like,
yeah. So we are a very open organization. We get emails. We take feedback in the stores, and we listen. We listen to our customers. We listen to our program participant. We listen to women in our community. We're very, very transparent. And we take that input, and we just make sure that we listen to our community.
What are some of the suggestions or feedback that stick in your mind that maybe have resulted in going in new or different directions at Win? Are there a few examples that stick out?
I think some of the programs that have had the biggest impact in the community would be like our transformation programs, where we're trying to help women through the trauma that they've experienced to break through and to be empowered to make to be able to be strong and make decisions that fit the best for their lives. So being able to have programs like that, we're making radical changes for women, as well as programs like we have a self-sufficiency bursary program, where women that are wanting to better their lives for them, for their children, for their families, they can go back to school and get the training that they need, or they can apply to have a loan for a small business. And we take applications for that 2 to 3 times a year. And so those types of programs are able to help women make radical, huge changes in their lives, opposed to we have other programs that can be more like emergency services, or like where people are needing vouchers for clothing. And well, that is a need. That's not really making any long-term changes or a long-term impact. It's just filling a short-term need. So the programs that focus more on long-term goals, long-term needs, are the ones that we're able to focus on a lot more. It's not something that is really available too much in the community outside of us. So I'm really proud that we were able to offer that.
Now, you 8 years with the organization, and quite a learning curve for you, I imagine. You said starting as a volunteer and cashier and that. Can you just trace what that's been like for you all these years, like to go from one place to where you are now, and how you're feeling about your journey and yourself?
I think Wynn has really worked with me on my journey too. I asked a lot of questions. I made a lot of mistakes. I learned a lot, and now I feel very confident in my abilities as a person. Like, I went back to school. I got my associate's degree in pre-social work at Camosun while working at Wynn. And now I'm in a management position and on the board of directors. So I feel like I have personally grown with Wynn, and they have been nothing but supporting in that process as well.
That was Nicole LaPierre, retail manager and board member at the Women in Need Cooperative in Victoria. Thanks to all the cooperators at Wynn who shared their stories with me so I could bring this feature to you. And thanks to my fellow cooperator, Dale McGlattery, for his help with tonight's program. I'm Sandy Goldman. For all of us at Each for All, the Cooperative Connection, have a cooperative week, and stay tuned to Vancouver Co-op Radio for Arts Speak Digest. You're listening to Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM and online at cooperadio.org.
And I am all alone. There is no one here beside me. And my problems have all gone. There is no one to deride me, but you got to have-